Welcome, I'm Lori Lee Binstock, and this is a Trauma Survivor Thrivers podcast. Thank you for joining us for a Trauma Survivor Thrivers podcast on Mental Health News Radio Network. This podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, but I do suggest checking out Mental Health News Radio Network to find all your podcasts related to mental health. Today's guest is Jamie Heisman, founder of the Toxic Abuse Relationship Network, a 501c3 charity dedicated to bringing worldwide awareness and treatment to those whose emotional reality has been distorted by narcissistic abuse. Dr. Jamie has 30 years of experience in healthcare and media. He has developed Celebrity Foundation, serving millions. His trauma-informed clinical background has driven his passion to deal with this public health disaster in honor of his child and all children. Jamie, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, Lori Lee, this is exactly where I wanted to be today, just being part of your podcast and your overall outreach around the world. So thank you for having me.
Well, you know, I'm not sure if that intro really did you justice. I think there's just so much that you are doing in the field of mental health, and including TARNON, which I want to dive into. But first, I want to kind of know your story and how you came up with TAR, the Toxic Abuse Relationship Network.
Hey, thank you for asking that. Not many people, when they interview you, do they go from the bio to questions. But it's so great to clarify, actually, for your audience that actually, professionally, I want everybody to understand I'm actually a social worker. The greatest thing I ever did was go back into clinical social work. I was in the business world, and for some reason, I wasn't satisfied, kind of spiritually bankrupt many years ago. My sister dragged me in. She was a social worker. She said, yeah, social worker. I said, because I graduated in psychology at the University of Florida, like you did. I said, Pam, I said, I'm going to make $5 an hour at the state hospital. Are you kidding me? She says, yeah, but you make it a date, Jamie. There's 37 women and 2 men in the class. Well, I never got the date, but I did get the social work degree. So that is me. I really wanted to speak for people who had no voice. I came in by the advocacy. And I'm an older dad and older person. I'm an AARP. I work for United Health, WellMed, Optum. I'm their chief compassion officer, whatever that means. I kind of bring the mind and body together for our employees and our staff. But I, for one, believe that being a clinical social worker to me is critical. So I became that. I act as a social worker. And when I got into television, which was 1992, I actually, my mom, God rest her soul, she was a psychologist, and we were actually in practice together. She said, Jamie, and she was so cute. She said, Jamie, nobody wants to listen to social worker Jamie. I said, come on, mom. I said, I love it. She said, you got to become a doctor. It's got to be Dr. Jamie on Geraldo and Montel or Lisa or wherever the men are from Mars. I said, come on, mom. The reimbursement's good. I love what I do as a social worker. We deal with family systems, mind, body, spirit. She said, no. So I went back to school and got my doctorate. So I'm a PsyD. And then many, many years ago, before trauma was really that out there, I became a trauma therapist through Dr. Charles Figley's program at Florida State University, working with compassion fatigue, burnout, vicarious traumatization. So the healthcare field is obviously inundated with that. So that's what I really do. I work with our doctors, our staff. But more importantly, as you ask, I love working with foundations and charities. 501c3s is a passion. And I don't even get paid by our organization, and I don't need to at the moment until I have a succession plan where I'm at, then I'll come here. But I got engaged first in 501c3 with Lisa Gibbons in our last show at the Lisa Show. Her ratings weren't great, and she was taking care of her mom with Alzheimer's. And I am pretty much kind of like, I think, a mental health entrepreneur, not by business, not by design, but I was diagnosed with depression as a kid, ADD. My family had mental health issues. And I, for one, found back then the shame and stigma was just rampant. Mm-hmm. And my mom and everybody didn't want to, you know, maybe treat me in the way I probably could have been because the shame and stigma was so bad. And I figured I would be an entrepreneur for mental health. And so whatever that meant was get the message out. So one day I was invited to, our hospital group was invited to the Geraldo Show in 1992. And then I went there to speak about celebrities and could they get treatment in a safe environment. It's an old school days, maybe before you were born, when William Kennedy Smith trial was going on. And I said, Geraldo, I said, look, why don't you help these kids? I mean, they all got mental challenges, and you could be a mensch for a day. You could do, and they didn't want to do it. Tribune Entertainment, or they said it was too expensive. And then 6 months after, there was almost a murder suicide on his show, and they ended up calling me up in Washington D.C. actually, and they did an intervention on a man who was a actual sexual perpetrator, and they surprised him and his daughter on the third segment, something heinous that exploitive that TV does. And he went to kill his daughter. And they called me up and they said at 7 o'clock at night, do you know how to do an intervention? Cause I'm an intervention person on a man who's got a gun to his daughter's head. And I said, it doesn't matter whether I am or not. I'm the only person who can really do it at 7 o'clock on a Friday night. So I talked to the man. The power of TV, Lori Lee, and media is that she had one call to make, one. And she called back to the TV show because it was from the show that the show was aired. The father was fired. She came back to actually kill her and said, if I can't have you, nobody will. And she called back to the producer. That should show you the power of media. You know, like it or not, America's a pretty celebrity-driven culture. And, you know, we can see our politicians and the people we put in office. And she got one. And so what happened then was I finally talked him down, put the gun down. I took him back to his days of abuse because most abusers were abused as well. And somehow got him to put it down and flew them both down to a hospital in Fort Lauderdale. My friend had it. I said, I don't know where this is going. D, his name is D Goldberg. And I said, I don't know where it's going, but would you help me? And that was, and then we separated the father the next day because it clinically wasn't appropriate to a perpetrator unit. And she stayed in Fort Lauderdale. And we started TV Aftercare, which began in 1992. I worked on 12 talk court reality shows for the next 20 years. And we got about 800 guests, about $8 million of treatment. So I ended up testifying against Jenny Jones in 1996 and the telepictures for that terrible murder that occurred in Chicago. And then a little background now, I'm with Lisa. And Lisa was taking care of her mom. And I said, Lisa, you're taking care of mom amazing. She has Alzheimer's. I said, the mental health issues from like TV Aftercare. I said, now the mental health issues for family caregivers around our country is just as big. There's 45 million caregivers taking care of seniors. There's 40 million people taking care of special needs kids. I said, let's deal with the mental health of them. And so we started the Lisa Gibbons Memory Foundation. And we opened up 10 sites around the country, underwritten by hospitals. And that's, how that came about. So as a social worker, I was an advocate, but I'm also, I love clinical work. Somehow all these foundations were about other people's and other causes, which were great. But the TAR Network fell on my plate because of my treatment with my clients and my own experience many years ago with a person actually in Palm Beach. When I discovered what toxic abusive relationships were, meaning I had been in therapy, I had taken care of myself. I've been in recovery for codependency for years. And it brought me to my knees. And I always said to myself, I was going to come back here and deal with what we call the cluster B, narcissism, histrionics, borderline, antisocial, the relationship disorders. Because I felt if it killed me and it put me on my knees on the ground, it could do it to anybody.
Yeah.
So the TAR Network was born, but it came from actually my endeavors working with mostly underserved men. Most of my clients are women, of course, because they have this marvelous emotional connection to themselves and they should be our leaders today. But men never got help, never did. So I would try to work with men. And then Partners in Men's Health came around and boom, I, of course, didn't want it to be a HeToo movement. You know, it was the Harvey Weinstein stuff. And I said, let's just open it up. And found out that toxic abusive relationships are everywhere, everywhere. And I found this fabulous person in Prague, which I'll get into, I guess, a little bit later. But that's how the TAR Network was born. And it was born about 3 years ago. And it was to serve, like you said, toxic abusive relationships. We called it TAR, and I'll get into it for a strong reason. And I'll talk to you about it.
Well, what is a toxic abuse relationship? Because I feel like that could be really an umbrella for a lot of abuse people deal with in relationships.
It really is. It really is. As a matter of fact, so all I hear is Montel and Geraldo and Lisa always saying to me, cut the psychobabble, Jamie. You're talking to 6 million people when I was on the set. And back then, network TV had 6 million people. Now it doesn't. Now it belongs to you, the podcast, the excellent sort of innovators and creators for the new media. But I realized they were right, that we created a psychobabble, kind of. We created an ivory tower. And my greatest fear is to perpetrate, be a clinician and people not understand me because I'm an interventionist. So I work in the streets with addicts and alcoholics, and they don't want to hear the psychobabble. So I said, let's not call it cluster B. Let's not diagnose from DSM-5. I hear Geraldo Montel saying to me, let's call it all talk, toxic abusive relationships. So for me, they conjured up the notion when I was in that relationship of TAR, stuck on my feet, it stuck on me, and you don't even know you're getting into it initially, because I'll talk to you about that's love bombing, of course. It feels like so right, so good. I met my soulmate. And yet you're getting closer and stuck on people, and you get deeper and deeper into what we call the TAR pits. And you get dragged into the TAR pits, and it hits your complex PTSD because it all feels right for you and it feels different for them. So the issue of TAR, as I explain to people, is pretty interesting for me and for you. Listen, we all have attachment issues and attachment styles, right? I have an avoidant attachment style. I see my therapist all the time about that. Some people have a secure attachment style. Some people are anxious, right? You see that in dating forums, right? And I think that if you get the book Attached, it helps you a lot understand that. TAR can oscillate to the other end of the continuum. So if we all have attachment issues, which we do, it's a fascinating sort of concept. Marshall Linehan started the DBT movement in the 80s. the attachment theory came out also at that time. So your question is great, because how do we know it's a toxic abusive relationship? Where is the cutoff point? Because when you talk about the relationship disorders, you're talking about people with five indicators or greater that you can make a diagnosis of a cluster B, which is narcissistic personality disorder, borderline, et cetera. So I say TAR, which is the dark triad, if you will. It's the sticky stuff. But for us, everybody says, what's TAR? I said, TAR is a person with a lack of empathy, can't feel what you're feeling, can't bear witness to your pain, can't meet you in the middle with that. It's a person with very little or no accountability. So they can't say, I did something wrong here. Maybe I can learn from this experience. Oh my gosh, I'm human. They go into a shame spiral, which is, they have an attachment disorder, remember? So they're stuck between the ages of 4 and 8. So they go into a shame spiral. So it's a person that literally can't be accountable. And then ultimately, and it's tough for people to understand the Machiavellian principle, they're transactional. So at a young age, and I have deep compassion, I want to make this clear. I had gone through the anger journey and hell and damnation. This person's evil. And I don't think any child wants to be evil, but I've gone through the whole gamut and I have compassion for them. I don't think any child wants to be evil. It's really bad, inconsistent, terrible parenting. So, and we can get into that later. It's part of our foundation is how we address that. But for me, TAR is when you get into that relationship, it so feels right, but you'll start noticing these red flags and these signs that somebody is lack of empathy. They don't understand you. They start talking gobbledygook with gaslighting, word salad. It's never my problem. It's always yours. They'll rearrange it like that. And believe me, we're receptive. We have to own our accountability as empaths and codependents in this relationship. Like, yeah, what
so
am
there
I
is
doing?
A role from both.
There is. You can't keep blaming them. It's impossible. And revenge to me is taking care of your life, is healing your life. It's being the best you can be. Because as a therapist, you know, and clinically trained, as I said, I was lost in that world. I was in the fog of war, I remember, years and years ago. And you just can't keep saying it's them. They have a mental challenge. They have a disorder, usually. Those who are five indicators or greater, I'm going to say this because you asked me a specific question. Those who have five indicators or greater have a disorder, so I can't keep blaming them. Why am I here? Why am I taking this emotional abuse? Why does this feel comfortable to me? Why would I put up with all this? You know, and keep asking yourself. And that brought me back years and years ago to my complex post-traumatic stress, which I had never looked at. I had looked at my own recovery from codependency. Codependency is basically, you know, people, places, and things creating your self-esteem. I grew up the hero child in a very difficult relationship my parents had. And it wasn't codependency. I think addictions are a trauma response. And I learned it the hard way. And so when I got into recovery for complex PTSD, it all started making sense. And I started seeing TAR everywhere, men, women, the caregiver movement I was in, work sites, which I do right now. I work with toxic work sites. I have to make the same call of what you're saying now with a medical director, a clinic administrator, as I would with a partner. So I think the question's great. I do think if you're feeling those red flags, I think you should get into a trauma trained therapist immediately and reflect with them and let them be your guy, your facilitator. If it's feeling bad in your body, it's probably true.
You know, this is something that several people have come to me with, actually, I feel like in the last 6 months. But I feel like there are people who are like, why should I get therapy? They're the ones that are causing me to feel this way. What do you say? What do I say to these people? Because I feel like anyone can get therapy and it would be beneficial. But what do you say to those people who are like, it is not me, it's them?
Well, I agree with your premise. I think everybody should be in therapy. And also with the complex PTSD movement, I think it's problematic for us in the business world, insurance world, healthcare world, because I think everybody has adverse childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. Everybody has innocent abuses, meaning grew up like children should be seen and not heard, excessive timeouts, things like this. And these are all innocent abuses. So I think we all should be in therapy. We've never, as you know, the APA or anybody has never gotten CPTSD, complex post-traumatic stress disorder, in the DSM-5 as a diagnosis. We do have PTSD. So my answer to you, I guess, would be, look, why? Same thing I had asked myself many, many years ago. Why am I here? We can't keep blaming this particular person. I mean, she was very clear about how terrible her childhood was with me. She grew up in an absolute kill or be killed environment at 4 years old. This is, I don't want to get that psychobabble. It's an object constancy thing. She was, you know, not safe. No primary caregiver held her, made sure that the world was safe for her. So I knew all this going in as a clinician, but I can't keep blaming her. I had to say, well, heck, I spent years back there with her. What was I doing? And so I believe all of us, to your question, needs a roadmap, a guide, not a sycophant, not somebody who nods and says, okay, you're doing the right thing. By the way, back then, just so you know, years ago, I did have a therapist who kept gaslighting me as well. He wasn't trauma trained. And he sent me back and forth into the ring. You got to show up in these things. You got to be 50-50. He didn't know I was dealing with psychopathy, you know, and so that wasn't great help. But I do think that for us to heal the world, I don't get too platitude here, I'm not a Buddha, but to heal the world, like Gandhi says, you know, we have to be the change we want to see.
Right.
So I think anybody says, I don't need therapy, I don't need reflecting back, I don't need a safe place. Because Carl Jung says that 80% is just the bond, the therapeutic safety, the other 20% happens. People who resist that, and it's more because of shame and stigma, I think are actually resisting growing, healing, owning. I believe, and this is just my deal, is that healing our lives is not sitting on a mountain in Tibet and having a spiritual awakening. I did that maybe in the program, but and I still do it in Codependency Anonymous. Healing our life is becoming, like your powerful effort, authentic. It's becoming authentic. It's peeling these layers that the first 10 years of our life, which is I call, and Gabor Mate says it better, we spend 10 years of our life becoming who we are. We spend the next 70 years trying to get out of it. So we become imprinted in our minds, our neurological system, our brainstem, our amygdala, 0 to 4, which we can't even touch as therapists, right? And as the trauma, like my partner right now is having her baby. I said, Mila, be mindful of 0 to 4. Nobody thinks about it. And then 4 to 8. So I just believe it, we need it. It's like going to the gym, Laura Lee. You know, that shouldn't take just a trauma for us to do that. If we're working on our bodies, why aren't we working on our minds?
Right. I think it's just as important, because if you are concerned about your physical health, your mental health has everything to do with any type of, you know, I guess disease is what a lot of my guests have mentioned, you know.
Yeah. And if you really want to know that, because I know your listeners and viewers here, like the company I work for, need metrics and outcomes. And they want to know it's not voodoo, chicken bones and Santeria, new age stuff. Let me tell everybody to go to cdc.gov, CDC, Centers for Disease Control.gov, and look up the Kaiser Permanente ACE studies, the Adverse Childhood Experience studies. Powerful, longitudinal studies, 20-something years still going. tens of thousands of people, how the adverse childhood experiences of youth and growing up in very difficult situations play a role in our shortened lifespan, in our terrible resilient, you know, the dearth of our resiliency in dealing with traumas today, how we greet our partners, how we make our lives. The mind and body are inextricably bound up. And at my job today is where I have to bring it in. I think the worst thing American healthcare has ever done was separate these two worlds, psychiatry over here, the medical here, the dental over there. And so this is something, now we have to bring it all home. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the one somebody wants to see the ACE studies, they will see what you're speaking about here, that if you don't pay attention to that childhood trauma, the adverse childhood experiences, it will shorten your life. It'll impact you terribly later. And our doctors now, I'm training them to look, instead of like Gabor Mate, again, says, I refer to him. I sit on the advisory board of the Polybagel Institute. And Gabor says it best. He says, you know, trauma is not what happens to you. It's what happens within you. And he says, you know, quit asking your patients, he says, what's wrong with you? He says, ask your patients what happened to you. Mm-hmm. And that will open up a whole different discussion. So mind and body have been pushed away for years and years. It's important for us and for our children. That's where the energy has to flow to, for us to come together. And I think the first place it comes together is for ourselves. To, when I had that diagnosed with depression and ADD, my mom gave me a book. And I said, Mom, why would I want a book? She said, Jamie, to know oneself is to know the world. And she was right.
Yeah. Wow. In these toxic abuse relationships, and I mentioned it in your intro, the children in these relationships are the ones that are seriously affected. And, you know, especially if these toxic relationships are very, like, they're just blaming each other. What does that do to a child? And is there a way that this, you know, if that kind of relationship continues, is there a way that the kids will be spared, or what needs to happen?
It's a great question. I'm just going back to my lunch yesterday with a TV producer. People start talking about, I've never seen a topic in my life than toxic abusive relationships where people start talking. I mean, I work with depression, schizophrenia, bipolar. People don't talk about mental health issues often, even in caregiving. They put a bag over their head. They say, yeah, I don't want anybody inside my world. I'm sitting with people now who talk about what you're saying. Oh my God, this happened to me. This happened to me. Yesterday, I was with a producer from E! Entertainment. He said, I lost my three kids. I said, what do you mean you lost your three kids? He says, they're alienated. The partner weaponized them, poisoned them. And so to your question, the kids are the collateral damage. And I'm not saying what traumas worse. There's, because at the end of the day, all of our traumas mean different things to ourselves, physical, right, emotional, sexual abuse, you know, episodic issues, being a first responder, stepping on an IED. These are all things that from our perspective is it. From a clinical standpoint, I will say the most profound issue I deal with the child that's been alienated makes it maybe the one of the most difficult clinical situations to deal with. And I say that to answer your question. The cluster B, the toxic, the five indicators or greater, usually weaponizes their child. Mm-hmm. Why is that? They can't get into the moment with the child and realize it's a separate entity. It's a clinical thing. It's an extension of them. The child is no longer seen as a separate individual human being growing up, going through the stages of development. It's an extension of me. So if you look terrible, I look terrible. If she's terrible, if she's making bad grades or he's making bad grades, I look bad. So they can't discern. They're almost an accessory, like an earring and somehow, or a bracelet. It's almost an accessory of the cluster B. It's just clinical. It's not that they choose to be nefarious. I want everybody to understand this. This is a child that also was damaged completely. And so they come up and they're an accessory. So what is the best way to get to somebody who, quote unquote, abandoned you? Because the concept of abandonment for a toxic person is pretty much the core issue. Well, it's use the kids. I'm going to take this child. I'm going to own that child's mind. She or he is going to be an extension of me. And I'm going to tell her how bad, or he, it's a man. It happens all the time too. I'm going to tell my child how bad their partner is, the other person is. And I'm going to get them on my side. And that's how they see them, as they don't see them as their brain development and what it is. So the question you ask is great, because why it's probably the most difficult clinically to work with and the most profound is because, think about it. I mean, you're an amazing mom. Think about it from your kid's perspective. If somebody's programming them to hate half of the relationship, they're programming them to hate half of themselves. Mm. So when you weaponize a child, you're also taking their self-esteem down big time. They're looking in the mirror, that half, whether it was mommy or daddy, whoever's, you know, weaponizing who, now looks diminished. Half of me looks terrible. Half of me is like, oh my gosh, it's miserable. It's a cheating, lying, you know, whatever the lies were. And so the child has to look in the mirror, and half of it is not valid. So the ongoing development issues through weaponization or through parental alienation, if you go to the tarnetwork.org, we have many organizations that have joined us in Ireland and England that are dealing strictly with alienation, is the most difficult at all. My closest friend, I've watched him. I went to the bat mitzvah of his kid and everything. And he was a great daddy, you know? And I watched him. I said, boy, Jeff, you're a great dad. He said, yeah, but I lost my three kids. And I said, really? He said, yeah, my ex weaponized them and told them terrible things about me. And I did stupid things later that human beings do that fed into that narrative. Mm. And today, none of them will talk to me. So instead of being that gracious person and realizing the fight, if you have a fight, I mean, like the net access to this cluster B is always will have the fight. It'll last forever, ever. I have a patient of mine 25 years later, hadn't spoken to his partner. They got into an elevator over their child's wedding. And he says, we should be happy. Look, we should be thankful. Look at our son. She went off and started screaming at him in the elevator like it was yesterday. So they don't forget. So it's a terrible issue, parental alienation. It's a weaponization of children. It's also the weaponization of others. When these breakups happen, whether it's a man or a woman, they'll go create what I call flying monkeys. Everybody knows what flying monkeys are. Mm-hmm. Look at The Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. I was a film major. It was the first show that really dealt with narcissism in a powerful way. Is that when the witch sends back the monkeys, they come back to attack or get Dorothy and Toto. It's the same thing in a relationship. The mom or dad, whoever is alienating or whoever's triangulating, whoever's weaponizing. They'll not only weaponize the children, they'll weaponize all the friends. And they'll isolate the other person. And that's what happened many, many years ago. When I remember when I was in Palm Beach, you know, 20 some odd years ago, the friends pulled back because they were all told in their story. So if you think a child, 0 to 10, which is a blank slate, just looking for nurturance, fairness, consistency, availability, love, is being weaponized, then it's an incredible clinical challenge. And it's terrible collateral damage. And it's what creates very, very deep pathology in kids. And worse yet, if they don't end up becoming a cluster B, because if one parent is not deeply involved, it only takes one half neurotic parent to bond to a child, not to create an attachment disorder. But if you don't have the father or mother in the picture and you only have cluster B, the child will either be a cluster B or be a doormat. And so that is it. So I always caution and tell all my clients and tell everybody, whether you're mom, dad, you know, create a alternative, a neuroregulated life for your child. Obviously, never alienate, never put down the other person. Create safety, and they'll gravitate to that eventually. It's a long bet. It's a long haul. But there's nothing like alienation. It is an absolute nightmare. And we're dealing with tragedy everywhere we go, and I see it in clinical situations.
Oh gosh. Yeah, you know, it is interesting how easily you can mold a child's mind. You know, when, like, my son for the longest time would not want to eat whatever I made. What are we eating for dinner? I'm making this. I don't want that. Immediately. Sometimes he doesn't even hear what I say, because then later he'll be like, what are we having for dinner? I'm like, this. I don't want that. And then it took me a little bit, and I was just like, you know what? Why don't you go in thinking it's going to be delicious and just tell yourself, I can't wait for dinner. And then when I give you dinner, and then, you know, you can decide when you try it. And for 2 weeks, that worked so well. He actually ate all of his dinner. He's like, oh, this is delicious. You know, it's just like, it was like, I can't believe this is what's happening right now. And it went well for 2 weeks, because then it was like a reminder, let's get excited about dinner. And then obviously I fell off the wagon in doing that. And now we switch back and forth to what's in his head.
But you appreciate that. You see, you don't take it personal. The beauty of, you know, of health. Look, I'm a healthy neurotic too. Listen, I go to my therapist all the time. I am no Buddha. I tell my daughter and I tell the world. But you recognize that life is give and take, that we're not human doings, we're human beings. Whereas if cluster B would say that same situation, they would take it personal. You're not eating my food. I worked my brains off for you to get this for you. You know, when your son was just individuating and trying to test out boundaries and being a child, and you recognize the autonomy, you kind of laugh about it. You know, you'll get back on the horse and you'll become consistent later. But you saw the human condition here and you worked with him and you appreciate it. You and I smile over it. Mm-hmm. They don't smile. They take it personal. And you're not eating my food. You're not going to eat. You're going to go time out. You're going to be gone. You know, it's black or white. It's a binary issue. And that's another thing back to your other question. When you start getting into a relationship with somebody and it's black or white or binary, I call it good mom, good dad, bad, you know, dad. Then you got problems. Then that's how you see the world, is a fixed mindset or a growth mindset. And so if you're in a dating situation or if you're meeting somebody, if you're going back just to audit your relationship after this podcast, you know, take a look at that, these issues here. Audit your life and see bullies, which I work with street gangs and I work with intervention with addicts and alcoholics. Bullies are scared individuals. The narcissist or personality disordered person is a scared person inside. They create an image. Mm-hmm. The image is there to promote, keep people away, but also to protect the shame and stigma and shit stuff inside them that they feel has been instilled with them with coming up in a family with no self-esteem, being that accessory. And so the bully comes out of it. The bully comes out of it and they push and they fight and they pick on people. And they do that. If you're mom or dad, you'll see this as well with the kids, or you see that with the spouses. And instead of saying, you know, let's work on this, like you said before, the therapy and getting in, they'll just try to control. And it's a relationship disorder is a disorder of control, trying to control everything. But when they can't control anything, and a lot of times they'll step one step over the line, sweet Jesus, and that the tar dojo, we call it. I work with our clients. I work with people on getting ahead of this. You have to be a counter puncher. You cannot be a puncher. Mm. You know, I always say that if you want to get into a fight with one of them, it's like getting a fight with a pig. The pig likes it and you're going to get dirty.
Right.
So you have to totally understand that you have to get one step ahead of the process, healing your life, watching for them to make a mistake, if you will, neuroparenting properly so your child feels safe, and realizing radical acceptance. And this is tough for me as a therapist too, way back when, that you can't change them. That is the issue. Mm-hmm. You can't change them. And it didn't happen on your watch. It happened on their parents' watch. So you can't take it personally.
Yeah. Well, it is tragic, but you know, for toxic abuse relationships, you have a solution. You know, you have Tar-Anon, which I really want to get into. So tell me a little bit about Tar-Anon.
I'd love to. And thank you for allowing us to do that. I hope you air this all the time. I hope we use this all the time. But May is Mental Health Awareness. Mm-hmm. And we're working with a national organization, Let's Heal Us, Let's Heal US, as a representatives of many, many organizations. And the TAR Network, which is the foundation we created, and we have a great international team around it, had three projects in mind. One was all the things that people weren't there to fill in gaps in care. So there wasn't a complex PTSD center. Years and years ago, everybody wanted to put me in some codependency center. I said, guys, I clinically write those things. I oversee them. I've been in recovery for ages. I'm still on my knees. What's up? So there's no complex PTSD. So we're building that in Fort Lauderdale. Right now, it should be open in about 8 months. It'll be called Oasis here in Las Olas. The second thing we want to do, and I'll jump to the last one, is the prevention piece, is that no child wants to be evil. So we want to develop and roll out parenting programs, neuro-regulated parenting, which our foundation will beg you to be involved with, because I think that's where your passion and sweet spot and what we need, our blind spots can be. We want to get all points of view. And I think you would be fabulous with that. Yeah. But to prevention, our North Star, especially at my age, has to be prevention. I'm not going to change one narcissist, one histrionic, one borderline in this world, period. I know that it's baked in. But what we can do is prevent them. through the parenting program, the TAR Dojo neuro parenting program. And so we're going to scale that around the, we hope, hospitals in America and then internationally. But TAR-ANON is launching in May, and which is Mental Health Awareness Month. TAR-ANON is something also I didn't receive many, many years ago. And I was in recovery and I was going to CODA. My wonderful friend and my only wife, my first wife I had after this terrible thing, she is recovering from alcoholism. She's open with me talking about this. She's amazing, incredible sort of recovery for many years, sponsors everybody's healthier than me. She's just doing great. And she lives up in Jacksonville, your old hometown now, taking care of her father. I would go to meetings, to AA, to CODA. Nobody would understand the surrealistic nature of a toxic abusive relationship. Nobody would understand the questions that you're saying, that somebody's weaponizing the children and taking them away from me. No, they wanted to know, put a cork in the bottle, don't drink and go to a meeting. Or they wanted to know about people, places and things and my self-esteem and CODA. You couldn't say these things. And so back then I realized there was no free support group. Anonymous. I love AA, NA, CODA. I believe Bill and Bob, the creators in the 40s, did it right. They had emotional regulation and co-regulation in mind. And you know, as a trauma inspired person, informed person yourself, that's the key to healthy life is emotional regulation. We look behind me. Mine's obviously rock and roll. I love music, but I go to concerts because we're all like-minded. That's co-regulation. And so, you know, I feel that they had it right. We do right now support groups on intherooms.com, which has about 1.5 million people in 20 countries. And we're doing it every week. It's free. I don't want to have access or block access any longer to this. I think it's vital. They're in churches, ashrams, synagogues, AA, NA, CODA, right? And now we have the ability to do things online. So we wanted to create as a third project for the TAR Network, TAR-ANON, Toxic Abusive Relationships Anonymous. And Mila, my co-founder in Prague, who I was very blessed to meet many years ago, is a great writer, screenplay writer too. And she's absolutely, we all gone through in our team a lot of these situations. She's content writing. We're thankful to be in your magazine as well. So we're launching TAR-ANON formally in May. We got clinical research. God love Bill and Bob and AA. They were right about emotional regulation. They were right about co-regulation. But I do know as a clinician that AA or NA model would be triggering to a trauma survivor or to a person in a toxic abusive relationship. They would hear things. So we had to get clinically involved. Sandra Brown, who did 30 years of research on narcissistic abuse and narcissistic relationships with Purdue University. And so TAR-ANON, we do have a meeting, which is everybody can come to at 7 o'clock on Monday. But we're splitting up men and women for TAR-ANON. A lot of times in toxic abusive relationships, people feel that the medicine they need is another person. That, oh, I just need to get rid of this person and go meet another person. That's what we call the 13th step in AA and NA. It doesn't work. What really we need to do is take a break from the relationship, put a ring on our finger, start attending something like TAR-ANON and the other meetings, and have a relationship with ourselves. And really find where our center spot, really find why we're picking, where our picker is broken. Why are we keep picking the same person over and over? Why are we recreating our dramas and traumas of childhood? So TAR-ANON was our answer to developing around the world. And I'm blessed and fortunate. We're meeting people in Ireland, in the UK, in Middle East. There's a psychiatrist that wants to bring it to the Middle East. And he thinks, you know, a free place for trauma, like Israel, Gaza Strip, anywhere would be welcome. So we have the big book, which is called TAR Tales. Everybody should go to tartales.org. And if you will, see stories that really are around the world that we've retrieved from the TAR Network. During the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial, it just spiked because the awareness of relationships. That was, I call, the O.J. Simpson trial for relationships.
Wow.
Johnny had the ability to pay a legal force $40, $50 million to tell his children, Lori Lee, to tell, you know, Lily, Rose, and Jack, I'm not the perpetrator. And he had the ability, all dads and moms, when they come out of this, want to tell their children and the world the truth. And so I have to commend Johnny, you know, on that trial in some ways, because like whether it's a man or a woman, he had the trial and tried to tell his truth. And so this spiked. So TAR Network created Tar Tales a couple and a half years ago. And we love everybody who's listening to go there. You could change your name, you could be anonymous. And we have stories for men, women, caregivers, you know, teens, tweens, all the places where attachment disorders are. So Tarnon, we're just looking forward to this. I am personally looking forward to this worldwide support network, launching it with people like yourself, with England. We find the need right now for a place, free, walk-in, steps, promises, like AA, neuroregulation. This is trauma-driven, remember, co-regulation. I do breath work before and after meetings, right? 4, 7, 8. We calm people's neurosystem down, the vagus nerve. Owning our neurosystem, by the way, is your key out of trauma.
Yeah.
We've never really looked and embraced our neurological system, and that's the trauma model. So AA and NA had it right, but Tarnon will be a place you can actually have your stories. We also have what's called Tar Mentors, and we're training Tar Mentors, which are sponsors, but they have to have like 5 years of recovery for complex PTSD. And then they help people through the steps. They also put together the meetings, and they'll be not a sergeant of arms, but I don't want it to become, how do I say this? Nice. I guess I can't. It's a bitch session about your partner. I don't want it to be that. I don't want to say he did this, she did that, he did this, she did that. So they're going to keep things on track. Well, what did you do to emotionally regulate? What did you do to go find co-regulation, you know, and keep things on? So Tarnon will have a different clinical approach, but it does borrow from the self-help support groups. And we hope the access will be for everybody because it'll be free online or in person. So coming to a town near you. Thank you for allowing us to do this. And in your magazine in the month of May, if anybody hears this, feel free to contact us at Tar Network. And we need organizations. We can never do this alone. This is going to be a worldwide tough effort. And that's why I've got millennials like you around me, because I know I'm going to have to hand this off. It's going to be forever. As I said, I hope it will be just for your children, my children. And now my co-founder just had her first child yesterday. So boom.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. And what an amazing resource. What an amazing resource. And it is free. It is free. And, you know, I feel like we'll be taking a better look at our relationships now. Like what role do I play in this? What role did, you know, I think that's important.
You know, Lorelei, I'm so sorry to break in, but yeah. I ran treatment center for so many years, and it was always for the one percenters, you know, and mm-hmm. it was people who could afford it. Right. And I do believe the Tar Center Oasis is going to be powerful. And we're going to take all that money, by the way, and any profits we have, and put it to scholarship funds, because we're a 501c3. We can't take profit, thank gosh. But I think many people sobered up in the rooms of AA. Many people didn't have to go through treatment. Many people needed to get well and couldn't afford it. And for me, again, I want to thank our donors, because I couldn't do this without them. But we have donors who've gone through this hell, the toxic abusive relationship. They've come out the other side, and they have as graciously, you know, donated to us so we can do this for free. It will come for free. I mean, eventually, I think like in AA, people will give $1, $2 at meetings. If you want to go to Tar Network, thank heavens, you can give us $5 or $10, whatever you can afford or not. But I really have to do a special shout out for those donors of ours who it hit their heart. They said, okay, let's underwrite Tarnon, because I think it's going to take all of us and to do this. And many of them were hit particularly by this, like I was years ago, and still am. Believe me, it's on my mind all the time, and it's in my recovery all the time.
Wow. Thank you so much for everything you do. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I just want to, again, deep gratitude for you, deep gratitude for this podcast, and for you getting awareness out. I've always seen therapy as awareness, transformation, and self-love. It's three steps. So if you take an addict or an alcoholic, awareness is, you know, my life is unmanageable, I'm going to turn this over. By the way, Tarnon, you don't have to be religious. Just everybody knows, you can choose to turn it over to a power greater than yourselves, and you call him or her God, or you don't have to. You know, I also feel religion may be great if it comes from within, but when it comes from without, sometimes we have what's called spiritual narcissism too. So people can choose that. Wow. But awareness, transformation, and self-love is an addict. Maybe you'll come in and say, my life's unmanageable. AA and NA is a way to transform. Okay, you can transform through Buddha. You can transform through Jesus, Moses, you know, Allah. It's fine. You can find all paths lead to the righteous of transformation. But in therapy, awareness creates what Freud called cognitive dissonance. And once you're aware, you're no longer naive. So really, you can't sit with these competing thoughts, Freud would say. So you have to transform. But if we find our path to transformation, we're going to find our path to self-love. And that is the key here, is authenticity and not having to manage people, produce people around you, keeping our energy. Why they call them energy vampires is because these relationships suck our energy totally out and leave nothing there. It's like The Walking Dead. By the way, just so everybody knows, the pandemic, we see 1 out of 8 people, the American Psychological Association, that has an attachment disorder, which impacts in America alone up to 200 million collateral damage in the worksite. Kids, we were talking about, you know, partners, care, high conflict caregiving. So awareness, transformation, self-love. All I can say is that I deeply appreciate this interview. I appreciate you, your magazine, your outreach. We would love to be a part of any group out there. You don't have to donate, you know, you just have to become a part of it. Our daunting missions of treatment, of support, which is Tarnon this month, and of prevention is a worldwide concern. The public health disaster out there is absolutely nightmarish. You can look at leaders, Russia, with their hand on the bomb. Malignant narcissists will kill us. It's not going to be COVID. It's not going to be the bubonic plague. So I would love for everybody just to come to TAR Network, organizations that are out there that are like-minded. And we don't know everything at our organization. In fact, we think we know nothing, and we're learning. And in Ireland and England, we're finding leaders showing up that they've been working like this for years. And they say, how can we come together? So we'll put a button on our website, TAR Network for Ireland, for meetings, you know, for this or for that. So we're creating what's called maybe the Library of Congress for toxic abusive relationships. We're inviting, if you will, everybody in who's listening to your podcast, who is reading your magazine, just to become part of this. You know, the only motive we've got here is to make this place a better world for my child, Mila's child, your beautiful children, and for their children. And it's going to be a daunting task. So I guess if you have anything to, if I have anything to say, is everybody please come join us at the TAR Network, and let's see how we can work together to make this world a better place.
Absolutely. So well said. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this interview and just really, really gave a lot of context to a lot of how children, especially how children are affected by these toxic relationships. And so I'm so grateful. So grateful.
I'm grateful to you too. Thank you so much for having us. I really look forward to the future and working with your organization.
Absolutely. That was James Heisman, founder of the Toxic Abuse Relationship Network, or TAR Network. For more information on Jamie, TAR, and Tarnon, you can go to tarnetwork.org or check out the links in the show notes. May's issue of Authentic Insider is out, and Jamie has contributed to a piece that you won't want to miss. Check out Authentic Insider at traumasurvivorthriver.com. That's traumasurvivorthriver.com, as well as past episodes of a Trauma Survivor Thrivers podcast. If you haven't already, please subscribe to my email list to get Authentic Insider magazine in your inbox monthly. Join us next week when I speak with Sherry Kaplan, an expert in integrative mental health and plant medicine, when we discuss how healing trauma is a process in healing the mind, body, and the soul. You've been listening to a Trauma Survivor Thrivers podcast. I'm Lori Lee Binstock. Thank you for being a part of the conversation. Take care.